Good evening, friends and neighbors. Welcome to episode 3 of Ray and Benny Talk Sports. We have a lot on the agenda today, but of course I got to introduce what should be the co-captain, the co-driver, the navigator supreme, the one and only Benny, coming in from almost near Headingley, Manitoba, all the way across the city from where I am. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. Good, Ray. Good week. NHL is back. CFL is getting closer to the playoffs. NFL's in full swing. So it's been a pretty good week so far. How about you?
Yeah, man, I'm good. I'm excited. Like you said, it's an exciting time for sports. The NHL is just rolling. The CFL is really coming into the home stretch. The NFL is getting really interesting. The NBA is starting up. And, of course, we have that Team Canada football team. I don't mean Canadian football. I mean, like, soccer, Canadian football team making a push to the World Cup.
Yeah, pretty
exciting. Yeah, this is probably the most exciting Canadian. Can I say Canadian football fans? I'm done with soccer. Like, we're there now, eh? Yeah, I think so.
We're getting there.
Yeah, I like what we see. I like what we see. So we'll be definitely talking about the Canadian men's football team. We'll definitely touch on some NHL action. What's going on? What's going on with Evander Kane and that crazy COVIDness going on around? We got Blake Wheeler also dealing with COVID protocols, and we'll look at those Canadian teams briefly after the first week of action in the NHL. Look, the Jets are playing right now 4-3 Winnipeg in Minnesota, 3:25 left. Looking good. Then we'll go into NFL news, talk about the Ravens, the MVP, what's going in Miami, what's going on in Washington, what's going on with the reffing, bro. What is going on with
good
the
old reffing?
Reffing,
man? Good old reffing. You know me and reffing.
Oh, and you know me and reffing. You've seen me leave the field of play and get in my car and leave a game because I can't agree with the reffing. So we know what that's about. Yeah. And then we're going to hit some CFL news with the Bombers. Still looking dominant, and some interesting CFL personnel moves going on. And like we said, Canadian football World Cup qualification. So let's get right into it, brother. Let's talk about former Winnipeg Jet. Yeah, former friend of yours, Evander Kane, former tracksuit wearer, getting suspended for 21 games for fake COVID documents. What's going on with Evander Kane, man? He's been through a lot. Yes.
Yeah, that guy's, he's been an interesting fella since since Atlanta Thrashers moved to Winnipeg. Yeah. I was excited for the guy. I was looking forward to seeing that guy grow and shine in a Jets uniform. And, you know, he had a first great season here. And then, then the stuff, the rumors, I guess you could call them, I guess it started with him, you know, not paying his bills or asking restaurants for free meals and all this kind of stuff. And it just sounded like the relationship with him and his teammates even in Winnipeg deteriorated. So, you know, and then now he went to gambling. He's not paying back his gambling. You know, he's got stuff with his ex-wife or, you know, currently separated wife with abuse allegations and all that. And now,
Which have been disproved.
Which it was never substantiated because I don't know.
That's better. Like Yes. Thank you.
It's interesting what she says sometimes too, if any of it's true. But and now you got this. Like you're starting to get back from the season's about to get started. You're trying to get back in good graces with your teammates, and then you go out, you fake COVID documents. So
yeah.
And now you got the team answering questions on their road trip here. And they're coming to Winnipeg soon. So, you know, they're going to be asking a million questions about Evander Kane when they get here. It's tough for the guys to answer that questions. And none of them were really willing to answer if they expect Kane to be back or anything like that with the team. So, I've heard that as well, that he was not a good locker room guy at that point anymore with the Sharks even last season. So. He seems like a good player. I mean, well, no, not that he is a good player. He is a good player.
He produces, man, without a doubt.
I don't know what kind of person he is, though. So he definitely produced, but the Sharks got to regret giving him that 7-year, $7 million contract, which they're still on the hook for.
Yeah, personality-wise, definitely you got to regret that. But I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second here. This guy's always been a personality. And without a doubt, we can't say that he hasn't been a hockey culture personality. He's been outside of that, you know?
Oh, yeah.
He's wanted to be like an NFL, NBA star. And that's a no-no in the NHL. Yeah. You know, like Big Mouth, there's a hockey culture there. Thank you. So I think he's been a victim of that and maybe being ostracized before he even really gets a chance. Yes, he has personal issues, but a lot of hockey players do, and they get second and third chances. But, you know, I'm not saying that he's a good guy, but I think, you know, his problems have exacerbated, have snowballed, maybe because he has not really ever been accepted in the hockey culture. Like the dude's clothes were thrown in a shower. That's high school shit. Yes? That's bullying.
You can say he's had his 2 to 3 chances. And when he went to San Jose, it was like a fresh slate again. And all his teammates talked glowingly of him. And then they signed him to his contract. And you're thinking, okay, he's finally found his spot. Maybe he's changed and he's grown up a bit and he'll fit in there. And then how long did that take to go downhill? You know, the gambling stuff, you're gambling in the middle of a playoff series against the Vegas Golden Knights. You're racking up bills. You're not even paying those bills. You're declaring bankruptcy. A guy who's making, you know, and I know what happens with people in sports. They lose money, but I mean, you got a $7 million a year contract. You should be good for a bit, right? So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if he's done in the NHL. Chances are someone will give him a chance again, but probably not at this type of contract that he has now.
Yeah, I think he needs, like, I know, second, third, fourth. Yeah, give this guy a chance and give him a good mentor. He has to be in the right situation. I truly believe, like, because we know the production is there.
When he focuses
and he plays, the production is there.
Yeah, very good hockey player, man.
Yeah, no and of course, I'm talking outside of the room. I'm not in the room. I don't know. Maybe he is truly a locker room cancer. But I will, you know, for the sake of sports talk, I will give him a benefit of the doubt as being a human being and has mistakes and maybe not being accepted. But goodness gracious, we can go on about Evander Kane as we have in Winnipeg for a while.
That guy is never forgotten here in Winnipeg.
No. Let's stay in Winnipeg and let's talk about Blake Wheeler being in COVID protocols. It's been an issue in sports. You know, we talk about Kyrie Irving in the NBA not getting the shot, not being available for half his home games. That's crazy. We had the Washington State go on in the Washington State Cougars football where the head coach was just fired because as a state employee, you have to be vaccinated. And at $3 million, you aren't vaccinated. You don't got a job. Sorry. Do I feel sorry for him? No. But let's talk about Blake Wheeler being in the COVID protocols, what the Jets are doing. They're playing right now 5-3 Winnipeg with 2:35 left. Roster decisions by Paul Maurice, brother. Share with me your thoughts on what we're doing tonight.
So Wheeler is vaccinated, but he has symptoms. So he's has to isolate for the next 10 days out in Mini there by himself. So I think the earliest, I guess, he can kind of get back or get off his 10 days is October 28th. So hopefully he's doing good and he'll come back and he'll be ready to go by then. But yeah, the roster decisions for tonight in the first game with Wheeler gone. It's not just me. Twitter was ablaze with it. Everyone was excited. They saw Perfetti, you know, he was on that fourth line. He did a little bit of power play duty in practices the other days. And they're like thinking, okay, maybe he's going to get in there. No. Pomo goes with 11 forwards, 7D, which doesn't make sense to me. Why not leave Perfetti in? And now that they're winning, I guess Pomo's a genius.
Yes, he is.
But it doesn't make sense. Why not leave Perfetti in? I know we talked about this earlier and you mentioned, well, why waste his time on the fourth line? But I mean, the guy was getting third line minutes. Why not even sprinkle him a bit on the top line and see what he can do? You got Nash. Riley Nash is on your power play unit 1 tonight. Again, another move that doesn't make sense to me. You have Vesalainen, who I've seen sit in that line A spot and has that wicked shot. Not necessarily saying he's going to do the same thing as line A there, but why not give him a shot in there and see what he can do on a power play unit? You know, like this power play unit scored first times, I think. Only one, or Dubois may have scored actually now on the power play too, but that, and again, Dubois' second power play unit. So that first power play unit has not done very well.
Yeah, true. I agree with many of the points. I'll be honest with you. I would love to see Perfetti play, but I do not want to see him forced into a lineup. I do think that playing him on the fourth line would be a little bit of a waste of time. I think, especially in regards to those nine games, entry-level games that you have to have him to play. I think, you know, I can only dream, actually, that it's a Cole Caulfield kind of situation. Let him go back to the AHL. Let him get his legs, get him more confidence, because he didn't look very good in the first two games. I get it, not many minutes, but he didn't look very impressive to me. And then bring him back later on and let him prove himself after he's gotten a little more confidence at AHL. For me, you mentioned Twitter. Twitter was ablaze with, oh, Paul Maurice again, not letting young guys play. I think that's kind of a false narrative. Kyle Connor, Andrew Kopp, Josh Morrissey, Adam Lowry, Connor Hellebuck were all brought up at the right time, and we've seen them flourish as NHLers. So to say that Paul Maurice is not a young guy fan, I think that's a bit off base. I know you got thoughts on that.
Yeah. I mean, bro. The guy, a lot of his good decisions have come in because of injuries have forced him to make a move. I mean, you can go back to last year and Stanley coming into the lineup. If Julio doesn't get hurt or if Spezza doesn't get claimed on waivers, Stanley never gets it into the lineup, you know? And it's like, look how he did pretty well. And he learned on the fly last year, and it helped. It's mm-hmm. probably going to help him in future years. There's a lot of people that call in Stanley a bust, right? And maybe, you know, he was drafted in the first round and maybe he's never going to live up to that first round status. But he seems like he's going to be a solid 5-6 defenseman for this team. Yeah. But he wouldn't have got that chance last year. You know, and again, tonight you're throwing Beaulieu in there to play as a seventh defenseman for what? Like, because you need a big team against the Wild? Like, I mean, look at Kaprizov from the Wild. If he was on the Jets last year, Paul Maurice probably wouldn't have played him. And I don't see your idea of Perfetti coming in as a Caulfield type of guy. I don't see that happening because there's no way Pomo is going to play Perfetti like that in the playoffs come that time. To me, it's just his lineup choices at times just don't make sense. You got these young guys. Best line in's taken 4 or 5 years here to even get a crack at this lineup. A couple guys have gotten a little bit better. Connor did start on the Moose and had to work his way up. Same with Hellebuck. I know he got a chance early and he couldn't take advantage of it. And then once they got Mason, that season just kicked off for him. So I don't know. To me, I'll continue questioning his lineup choices. And I just hope the Jets can overcome them. You need Hellebuck probably to be very good. And so far to start the season, he's been okay. So
yes,
he can pick it up a bit. So
that is a big, not a worry for me, but it's just something that's there to start the season. When one of the top goalies in the league is a bit off of his game, it definitely does trickle down on the rest of the team. And I do hope Perfetti gets a chance to play. And again, I just hope the Winnipeg fan base doesn't get too crazy and this doesn't turn out like a Nick Petan kind of thing. Play the guy. And then, you know, where's that dude now? It don't really matter.
He just got waived by Vancouver, actually.
Yeah, there you go. And there was a cry for Petan for a long time.
I mean,
he was forced into action a bit too quickly. And he was not a prospect like Perfetti. Don't get me wrong.
Twitter usually finds a guy and they try to build him up, but. But the problem is sometimes Paul Maurice doesn't give those guys more than fourth line minutes and it's hard for them to get going possibly. So, I mean, you got to wonder how Freddie's confidence even feels right now, knowing that, hey, I'm the 12th forward, but I didn't get dressed tonight because we went with 7D instead of me. So
true. Yeah. True. I guess my conversation in regards to that is then who do you move? Do you mess with Harkins or Vesalainen's confidence, who have been kind of steady already? And look pretty solid, you know, so you'll have to move someone down to that fourth line. But yeah, it's a puzzling 11-7 decision by Paul Maurice. That is awesome.
My biggest thing is that you went with 11 forwards and you didn't play it. I mean, if they had everyone healthy and they decided, you know what, let's play Harkins or Vesalainen or Shevchenkov instead, okay, fine. I could live with that. But the fact that you went with 11 forwards...
And yeah,
you left the guy out, be the 12th forward. That's what gets me. So,
yeah, the word on Paul Maurice Lovers is that, hey, maybe a defenseman was a little hurt and he's just making sure.
Oh yeah. He just needed his, he needs his full level of grit in that lineup. So
this is what happens. We're talking with the Winnipeg Jets on game night, where it's still a 5-3 third period, 6:16 left, big scrum in front of the Jets net. Let's talk about the other Canadian Jets teams. Let's do a quick power rankings of the Canadian teams. 1 through 7, who you got there, brother?
Well, right now, unfortunately, I got to stick with the Leafs still at the top. I'm going to throw the Oilers at number 2. Coming in at 2-0, although they've only got to play Calgary and Vancouver so far. So,
yeah,
you know what? I'm going to give – this might be the only time I'm going to give them any props this season, but I'm going to throw the Sens in at number 3. You know, they're 2 wins, 1 loss. You know, they beat the Leafs. They beat the Stars. So,
yes.
Why not give them some props here to start the season? I'm going to throw right now, just because I expect more out of them, I'm going to throw the Jets still at number 4, even though they're 0-2 and coming off 2 losses to the Sharks and the Ducks. The Canucks are going to come in at number 5 for me at 1-1-1. Not a bad way to start the season off for them. And then we go down to Calgary as number 6, who are winless in 2 games against the Oilers and the Ducks. And then in 7th, we got the Canadians, who so far haven't figured out how to win a game, losing to the Leafs, the Sabres, who are 3-0, by the way.
Goodness, they are exciting to watch as well. And Detroit.
Detroit had a pretty good game there with Tampa Bay the other night, even though they blew it. But
5, that was a good game.
Buffalo 3-0 without Jack Eichel. Crazy.
Just trade them. Get your pieces now. Get your chips. My rankings are the same as yours, except I'm flipping Winnipeg and Ottawa. Just because I know it's supposed to be week to week, but Ottawa just has Winnipeg. I just have a little edge when we have that goaltender play a bit better. But I have the same thing, you know, the bottom of the barrel. Calgary, Montreal, I have meh and yuck beside both of those teams. So my rankings, we're on par. Oh, no, I lied. I have the Oilers as number 1. They are hot out of the gate again. But we'll see what happens.
They are, but like we said, they haven't had the toughest start to their season. They are playing tonight against the Ducks, I believe. So we'll see how they fare there.
That's some good NHL talk. We blew some time on that. Let's go to NFL news. And one of the marquee matchups last week, the Ravens against the Chargers. That was supposed to be one of the heavyweight tilts, and it looked like a heavyweight knockout from the Baltimore Ravens, who I've hitched all my horses and whatevers to. What are your thoughts on that matchup and what happened, what went down?
Yeah, same. I was expecting a crazy matchup. We've seen the Chargers win some good games this year. They beat Kansas City. They've been on a roll, and Herbert and that offense has looked unstoppable. So I was expecting, you know, to me, the Ravens so far, they look good, but at times their D doesn't look great. And I still wasn't thinking they'd be the team at the top, but they just took it to the Chargers. The Ravens D stepped up and just they shut Herbert down. They shut Eckler down. They kept Allen in check. And you know what? I got to give props to Lamar Jackson. Dude's been, he's been looking pretty good this year. There's no question about it at all. So,
yeah, I think they have the formula to go very far. When you have a dominant running game like that, they went for like 180 plus with 4 different running backs. If you put Lamar Jackson in there, 3 backs, a touchdown each.
And they're all old men.
Like, thanks, bro. Le'Veon Bell, Latavius Murray. Devontae Freeman all had a touchdown worthy of fantasy football. And that defense is coming together. They are a team that's scary. And I'm looking forward to next week's matchup with Cincinnati. I think that'll be a test to see where Cincinnati really is as a team, because they're looking good too in that NFC Norris.
Yeah, Cincinnati's, this is their time to make a statement game. They've beaten the Steelers already so far this season. If they can end up taking down the Ravens too, you know, the talk will be more about them. They were close against the Packers a couple weeks ago, just some unfortunate field goal kicking, but yeah, they could take over top spot in that division. When was the last time they did that? Carson Palmer? Did they ever do it?
Exactly.
I guess Andy Dalton. I guess they might have there, but yeah, it should be a pretty good game.
Let's talk about, since we're talking about Lamar Jackson and the amazing season he's having, let's talk about MVP candidates so far this year. Justin Herbert's got to be on my list. But before I go off my list, who do you got on your list for MVP candidates?
Right now, it's going to be Lamar for sure. But I got to throw Derrick Henry in there. And I may even put him first after that performance yesterday. Yeah, Bills had a strong D going into that game, and Henry just treated them like children. You know, like
you see that guy? He's a man amongst yes, children, like you say.
Yeah, if you look at him sometimes compared to some of those DBs or even some linemen, you're like looking at him going, "Dude, that guy's huge compared to them, right?"
And that
76 yard run for a touchdown, he's gone. The speed too on him once he gets open. So I'll throw him in there. And then if Josh Allen would have pulled it out last night, I would have thrown him in my top three. But I'm gonna leave Kyler Murray right now in my top three and Josh Allen just on the outside looking in. But like I said, if Josh Allen would have been able to pull off that game, he would have been in that top three for me.
Man, I'm sleeping on Kyler Murray that you mentioned him now. I'm sleeping on Kyler Murray. I definitely do got Lamar Jackson. That guy is an X factor, more so than Michael Vick. And like I said last week, shut up, people, about the guy doesn't have an arm. When he needs to throw the ball, he throws the ball and it's good.
Yeah.
All right. So let's just forget about that. Oh, he's a running back who plays quarterback. No, he's a quarterback who can run very well. You know, and Derrick Henry, how can I not say that guy's not an MVP contention? Like Dez Bryant, did you see that guy's quote? He is the custom Madden player we all made when we were young. And he's right.
Yeah, that's so true. 99 all across. The only
difference is when I made him, his name was Ray Strawn. That's the only difference. But this guy is Derrick Henry going nuts for 130. This guy's on pace. 3 touchdowns a game in multiple games. Come on. But I have to stay with Justin Herbert. I think he'll bounce back from this game. He's just always calm and collected. And I think, you know, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And talk about valuable. I think he is a value on that Chargers team. So I'm gonna slide Justin Herbert in there as long as he doesn't have 2 weeks in a row like this.
Yeah, you're probably gonna expect games like this from Herbert still, right? It's only his second season.
That's crazy.
He's gonna have ups and downs, right? And I don't know if Staley was doing him any favors there with going for multiple fourth downs, even in your own end. So I expect Herbert to bounce back and have a strong game in this next game when they're back after the bye. So,
hey, I'm gonna get sidetracked here. Talk about fourth down gambles. What about that Monday night game with the Bills going for it on the 2 yard line for the win and not taking the field goal for the tie? I know this is a new subject here that wasn't on the rundown, but thoughts on that? My goodness, what a great game!
I like it. I'd expect with Josh Allen, you're gonna get that easily. You know, but the guy, I don't know if he just slipped or what he did there.
Yeah.
I mean, you saw the play before when he almost ran and almost got that first down marker and just off a bit, right? And can I say something? The review,
of course.
The review in that fumble in the Steeler game was way longer than than any review last night in where that ball should have been on that play. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
NFL officiating, but we'll get into that later. I would expect that Allen. You know, there's so many threats there. You could have had Allen sneak it in or sneak it for that 1 yard. You could have had Moss in the backfield run it. You know, there were so many options there, and I expected them to get it easy. But unfortunately, it did not work out for them.
Wow. What a great game. What a great game. Yeah. Sorry about getting sidetracked there. Let's get back on track. We were talking about Herbert being there for the MVP. Let's talk about the coach, Brian Flores, who wanted to draft him for the Dolphins, and the situation that team's in. They have not won a game when they've gone to London, so I suggest don't go to London. But what else is wrong other than going to London? The Dolphins, my gosh, they're horrible to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't blame that loss on Tua. He played well. He came on strong in the second half and everything like that, but Yeah, I agree. They should have went Herbert. There's no question there over Tua. But things just have not gone right for them this year. I mean, the D hasn't been as good as expected. They are dealing with a bunch of injuries. They went out and addressed their wide receiver position by signing a guy who gets hurt a lot, and Will Fuller. So, and where is he? He's on the IR. So, but I don't know, man. In all the embarrassing losses the Dolphins have had over the last few years, you know, we have a friend who's a Dolphin fan, so he's lived through a lot of misery of losses. But when you lose to the 0-5 Jags and Urban Meyer to fall to 1-5, I don't know, man. That's almost another low to me. Like, I think
20 losses in a row. 20 losses in a row. 20
losses in a row. And then you end it in London. And you know what? Trevor Lawrence, first rookie running back, first rookie QB to win in London, actually. So
history. It just gets better.
That's another thing. But yeah, I don't know. Like, even their draft picks lately, not too many have stepped up in roles. I mean, to me, this franchise had playoff aspirations this year, and maybe even a Super Bowl aspirations as well that they couldn't take advantage. So again, the guy at the top for me is probably the biggest problem in Stephen Ross and his meddling that he's done over the years. So nothing's going to change there while he's the owner. And I think if they miss the playoffs this year and lose out again or lose consistently again this season, they're going to be cleaning house once again this year.
Yeah. And the thing is, they shouldn't be cleaning house.
No.
Brian Flores clearly is a good coach. He wrung out some good games and some talent from that team last year. They were not a playoff team, and they were like, what, half a game away from being in the playoffs?
Yeah.
He is a good coach, and we know he's a good talent evaluator because he won the Herbert. So, you know, they probably will fire him, but they really should not. Steve Ross has got to get out of the kitchen, you know, maybe fire the GM, who's so easily foldable to Ross, but just owner, get out of the kitchen. It never works. It doesn't want to work.
And that's the problem over the years with that, though. And you know what? Part of the problem could be, again, clearing house and starting all over again, right? So early in this tenure with these guys, sometimes that's not the best idea. But, you know, if you know Stephen Ross, that's what he's going to do. So.
Oh, goodness. Bless the people in Miami. I don't know what's worse, the situation with another meddling owner who is, you know, actually off. Of being hands-on owner because the NFL forced them with a $10 million fine because of the working conditions at Washington football team. Oh, my goodness. And it keeps getting worse. It keeps getting worse. More emails about Bruce Allen, a team executive, with Jeff Pasch, an NFL executive, making fun of Native American culture and the NFL efforts in diversity. It's a mess in Washington. We talked about how we feel sorry for Ron Rivera. So what's... You know, share your thoughts on that situation.
Yeah, I'll definitely say the Washington situation, ownership and all that stuff is worse than Stephen Ross in the Dolphins situation.
Yes.
Dan Schneider is something. He's something else. that franchise has just done everything wrong over the last, I don't know, what has it been, 10, 15, 20 years? Like, it's just nothing they do is right. You shake your head and you scratch your head wondering what they're doing or what the owner is doing. And really at this point, it seems like the NFL should have taken this franchise away from Snyder and even, you know, forced him to sell this team instead of this little slap on the wrist. They gave him a $10 million fine, big deal for Snyder. And I feel for Ron Rivera, the guy, he seems like a great guy, a great coach and everything like that. And I even questioned when he got hired there. It's like, why? You probably could have got any job. Why were you taking this one, right? You know what the owner was. Like, did he think he was going in there and he's going to change the culture and all that? It seemed like he did for last year, but
that was
right. It seems right back in the toilet again this year.
Yeah, I'd be embarrassed to be a Washington fan, and that's probably why they don't show up to games.
Yeah.
That's why they're worse in attendance, not just because the stadium's in the middle of nowhere, but because it's an embarrassing product. What kind of franchise honors a young, deceased, amazing player, retired number, and announcing it 72 hours before it happens?
Yeah,
Yeah.
The Washington football team. That's who.
Exactly. Like, you're having problems with it. We know as fans, teams, when these games happen, they're planned before the season is announced.
Yeah.
Sell tickets. How can you even think that as a genuine sign to respect a guy when it's clear that it was rushed? Are you trying to cover up what's going on with the emails?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a great way to try and shove everything under the rug, right? I mean, why not? Why not have a retirement ceremony for one of your best young players who unfortunately died during burglary? And get everyone to stop thinking about these emails and Bruce Allen and all that stuff going on. But to me, it was rushed. Like, I know they come out and said, oh, no, we were planning this all season. We knew it was going to happen. But why the hell would you do it 72 hours before the game, announce it on Twitter, tell the family? The family didn't even know until that time, really. Yeah. So none of it made sense. And to me, the stuff that happened throughout the game also on top of it did not make sense. They named a street after after Sean Taylor. Did you see the picture of his family posing on the street?
Yes. Yes.
Why is there 6 porta potties behind them in this freaking picture? Like, if this was planned at all, you think at least, you know, let's move these porta potties out of the way and get a better picture of this. Bro. Like, are you serious with this? And then you got the owner. I don't know if he's still the owner or what the hell he is, taking a picture with the family. And he's just in a old Washington football team hoodie, you know, not even dressed up, anything
unbelievable.
Like that. Halftime ceremony had no speeches, no recognition, barely anything. I mean, all they did was unveil what, a picture or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then the thing to me that got the most was his sideline number was the VIP section for, I don't know if it was for Kansas City family or whatever. You got Jackson Mahomes recording a TikTok of him dancing on the freaking number. And it's just like, you're sitting there looking at this thing and going, holy shit, what is happening here? People hate when people step on each other's logos. Never mind now on a retired 21 number, you got a guy dancing and doing a TikTok, or that's your VIP section for people to stand in. I don't know, man. That franchise is the worst of the worst for me right now.
It's a joke. It's an absolute joke and embarrassment to the NFL. Talking about embarrassments to the NFL, the reffing this season. Oh, my goodness. And before we move on to that, we're live with Winnipeg Jets action. It's 5-5 in Minnesota after a disallowed goal. It was 6-4 for the Jets, was it? And then they disallowed a goal. Now it's 5-5.
Who was it that went offside on that goal? Good God. You were 3-1. I think it was Kyle Connor,
right?
3-on-1 on an open net. What's your rush, man?
No. You were waiting on that one. Eh? You're waiting on that.
Good God.
But let's go back to that horrid NFL reffing. Let's just touch on that for a brief, because it only deserves a half a minute of attention. Your thoughts on reffing in the NFL?
Yeah, I think it's been one of the wow, that goal is brutal. Sorry, I can't. Yeah. Wow. Reffing in the NFL, to me, I don't know, it seems it has to have been be worse this year. Like, the amount of pass interference calls that are made on very questionable plays, the holding calls that get called and that don't get called, and it's just like, leave you scratching your head going, well, why is that holding and that one's not? The biggest one, and I mean, we're throwing the taunting calls. I mean, I don't understand don't these taunting calls, man.
Like, no fun. No fun.
You look at the guy the wrong way and that's taunting. Like, how do you even judge what's taunting, what's not? Exactly. And then you had the roughing the passer call on Kyler Murray this past Sunday.
Goodness.
Which was a two-handed light push where Kyler didn't even fall and it ended up being a 15-yard penalty to Cleveland. So, you know me, I can't stand refs in any sport and I usually end up arguing them. But the thing is, it's a billion-dollar business. Have an eye in the sky that can correct some of these calls, especially these big 15-yard penalty, first down penalties. You know, like, you know, get something to fix that.
That's great that you mentioned that, because Mike Pereira, former head of officiating consultant on with many networks, believes that instant replay and the communication they have with New York is actually downgrading the officiating. They're not as attentive. They know they have a safety net, and they're more worried about getting the grade right, because they're graded every week, right, on their performance. They're more worried about getting the grade right than actually being there in the game calling it, because they know, hey, I can go to New York just to make sure. So you have less attentive rest, and this is on Mike Pereira, and I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that. You have calls like the call in the Pittsburgh game. Why are you reviewing a clear fumble and wasting time?
Exactly. Like,
that is ridiculous. So the reffing's got to change. It's got to change, but I don't know if you can take out instant replay. How do you fix this?
No, I think instant replay's got to stay, but there's got to be a better system in place.
Yeah, you can't go back. That's his problem. You can't go back, just like the personal fouls and the roughing the quarterback. No, you can't go back now.
No. They made this mess.
Good luck fixing it. Yeah. Let's move forward to more football. Quickly, let's talk about the CFL. We know the Bombers are still dominant, but there were a little crack in the armor. Jamarcus Hardrick was out. The offensive line didn't look as good as they usually do. And, of course, kicking. Oh, my goodness. Which they might have fixed. We'll talk about Sergio Castillo. But any concerns about the Bombers clinching early and who might be their competition right now going into the final weeks of the CFL season?
Yeah, big concerns. I think we've mentioned this before, but going back to 2001 when they clinched early and rested guys for the last 2 weeks of the season. And then they came out flat in the playoffs. Even in the West or the East final that year, they did not look good. And then in the Grey Cup, they looked even worse. So, as much as I want them to clinch, that West final already or first place, I do think, what are they going to play for over the next 4 weeks then if they do already, right?
Yeah.
To me, again, that Bomber O's has to get more consistent. And maybe it's partly because of all these missed field goals where we're thinking, okay, they're not scoring many points. But Carlos has to get a little bit better. He missed a few throws and probably some easy touchdowns against the Elks there the other day. And then his Harris injury. The one good thing is that I have nothing to play for a little bit, so let the guy rest and heal up for the playoffs. But it just depends how serious that injury is for me. So, definitely keep him out if you can.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking about the CFL coming at the playoffs, and the Montreal Alouettes made a huge move looking to make a playoff, bit of playoff noise themselves by acquiring Trevor Harris from the Edmonton Eskimos, a prime quarterback who is relegated to third string in Edmonton. Thoughts on that move? Some people think this is it. They're going for the pull on this one.
I think it's a good move for the Owls. Why not? Your starting quarterback was out with Vernon Adams, and you didn't know what you really have in the backup with Schiltz. So I like the move for Montreal because, the East is still wide open. I would say maybe Toronto is the better team right now, but Dean Evanson is coming back for Hamilton, so you got three teams there that should probably, end up making a playoffs if Montreal could get on a roll here and hold off the wild card spot from the West. So I like to move Trevor Harris, although he didn't look great in that last game with the Elks, the Bombers there. Maybe he was just coming back from injury and just needed some time. But I like to move for Montreal. It'll help their offense. And I'd like to see what he can do with Bari actually as his OC and coach.
Agreed. If his effectiveness was because, or his ineffectiveness was because of injury, I think the move doesn't matter. They're screwed either way. But if it's beyond that, if it's about more time for the offensive line because he had a running game, he had receivers. Yeah. So if it's schematic, then yes, this is a good move for the Montreal Alouettes. And talking about moves, let's touch on the Bombers getting a kicker. Everyone's excited in Bomberland. Yeah. To get Sergio Castillo, former Winnipeg Blue Bomber, your thoughts on the acquiring of Sergio Castillo?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for it. Yeah, I mean, you couldn't go any further with Mortada. I know you had some games to see if the guy can do it, but the way he's been kicking, and even the other game when he had two, you're still even on that third one, you're like, yeah, he's missed, which he did, or maybe missed the third one or the fourth one. But I'm excited for Castillo. Dude was 87% in the CFL before he went off to the NFL. So he'll be a big upgrade there. And hopefully he can come in and kick at that percentage and help us in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping for, the 87%. And we're definitely not hoping for the guy who missed his last four kicks against Seattle Seahawks, which was his last live game action. So I'm with you. I'm praying that he does better because we definitely do need to upgrade that kicker with Marchetta. Thanks for trying, brother. Let's talk about Canadian soccer / football. They're making a move for the World Cup in the qualification rounds. They're looking good right now with some home games coming up. What are your thoughts on Canadian men's football?
Yeah, they got me excited again. I mean, I'll say they've been here before with World Cup qualifying and getting close, not this far, but getting close and then just getting thrashed in a game that they need to tie or something like that. But I think they got the team right now to qualify for, you know, the next World Cup. They looked great the other night against Panama. You know, that's a big win on home soil in TO there. Alfonso Davies, what a goal scored by him.
Alfonso Davies!
He had the Panama commentators or guys going crazy there. So.
Love it.
Yeah, like he's just a great generational talent, and Canada seems to have a few guys that can fill in there with Jonathan David, Tejon Buchanan, and even Kyle Larin. So I mean, this is the most I've ever been probably excited for Canadian soccer. My parents were born in Italy, so I followed Italian soccer all the time.
Yeah.
And I always expect them to be winning or whatever, you know, in Canada for hockey to keep winning, but never for soccer. But I'm looking forward to them making this run. John Herdman's come in and to coach them after taking over from the women's national team. And he's done a great job. And
yeah,
I mean, maybe it's all the talent he's got because we've never seen this kind of talent before on a Canadian team, but he's done a great job in bringing them all together. I mean, they freaking tied in Mexico. They scored a goal in Mexico, for Pete's sake. They haven't scored a goal in Mexico since 1980. So to me, that's huge.
This is long overdue.
Yeah.
For a country that's so multinational, hopefully this equals more funding to the Canadian soccer body, because that's the only way actually that they're going to keep on improving and keep riding this trajectory. And what's exciting for me is those next two games in November in Edmonton.
Yeah.
In the cold against number 44, Costa Rica, and number 9, Mexico. I hope it snows like a mofo in Edmonton. And they have to deal with that artificial turf and they cry. Because I'm really excited actually going into those two games coming up.
Yeah, it's hopefully it is nice and cold. And like you say, hopefully it increases the funding. So, I mean, we had the women there win the Olympics, gold, you know, and now with Canada, the men making this run towards the World Cup, you know, maybe it's finally time to give soccer more of a shot in the arm here in Canada.
Bro, we are in overtime and we're watching the Jets in overtime and they just lost against Toronto Wild on a 3-on-1 after they had an opportunity at a 2-on-1. Is this how we're ending the show? Is this how we're effing ending the podcast on the Jets loss?
We fire Paul Maurice yet or no?
Yo, cut the tape.
Talbot made a wicked
save.
We're
done.
I'm not
even getting in that tonight. This fire promo, unbelievable. Good effort by the Jets in Minnesota. You know,
come on, long man. Good effort.
Long road trip. It was a good effort.
You just lost 6-5. 6-5.
I'm not saying it's a great decision, but they came off a West Coast road trip to start the season, playing against one of the toughest teams in the division. 6-5.
Can I say something though? If we go back to our predictions, we both picked the Pacific Division to be weak. So losing those first two games against Ducks and the Sharks is horrible, I guess, considering our predictions.
Yeah.
And then being up 5-3 here against the Wild and not being able to pull it off. I mean, they were on a 2-on-1 shorthanded, and I don't know who blew a tire there, but
they didn't bank it in.
And then it led to a 3-on-1, and, you know, we're how's
the offside?
Stop that. So, yeah.
Like,
and
these
then
are these mistakes. Like, these are player individual mistakes that we're seeing in front of our eyes here. They got to clean that up.
Yeah.
Or we might be in for a long season here. My goodness.
It's going to be a long one, right?
We went to overtime. Graham got some editing to do. Sorry, the editor got some editing to do. You've been exposed. Thank you for joining us as we leave you on this heartbreaker.
Go, Pomo, go.
Yeah, what else you got to say to people before we leave tonight?
That's it. I got to leave it at that. Yeah, I got nothing to say after this loss.
We'll be back next week for some more Ray and Benny talk sports, and hopefully we'll be happier. Have a good week.
Have a good one.